How's everybody doing? It's great to see you guys, and it's always great to have the opportunity to come here. I truly do consider it an honor and a privilege every time I speak here, and I approach it with a great sense of awe and in the fear of the Lord. Proverbs chapter 2 is my assignment today, and I'm going to read the entire chapter before I share what I feel the Lord's led me to share. So if you'd like to read along in a Bible you may have brought or a Bible that's on the table, I'm going to read the whole chapter. And I'm reading from the New Living Translation. My child, listen to what I say and treasure my commands. Turn your ears to wisdom and concentrate on understanding. Cry out for insight and ask for understanding. Search for them as you would for silver. Seek them like hidden treasures. Then you will understand what it means to fear the Lord, and you will gain knowledge of God. For the Lord grants wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He grants a treasure of common sense to the honest. He is a shield to those who walk with integrity. He guards the path of the just and protects those who are faithful to Him. Then you will understand what is right, just, and fair, and you will find the right way to go. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will fill you with joy. Wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. Wisdom will save you from evil people, from those whose words are twisted. These men turn from the right way to walk down dark paths. They take pleasure in doing wrong, and they enjoy the twisted ways of evil. Their actions are crooked, and their ways are wrong. Wisdom will save you from the immoral woman, from the seductive words of the promiscuous woman. She has abandoned her husband and ignores the covenant she made before God. Entering her house leads to death. It is a road to the grave. The man who visits her is doomed. He will never reach the paths of life. Follow the steps of good men instead and stay on the paths of the righteous. For only the godly will live in the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be removed from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted. Verse 11 is the verse that particularly stands out as kind of the central verse in the message of this chapter. Verse 11, wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. I want to say from the very outset today that I'm very proud of my family. I'm very thankful for the family that I came from. I'm very thankful for the family that I was born into. A few people in particular who are part of my congregation know that I'm a fifth generation minister, preacher, pastor, fourth generation in the particular branch of the church that we're involved in. But that's not all there is to my family. And that's not all there is to any family. And I'm going to share some things today that I've never shared publicly before. And some things that are very close to me. There are some great stories in my family of ministry. My grandfather was a leader in his denomination and spoke at one of their national meetings. My uncle was a leader in his denomination and spoke at one of their national meetings. But there are some other stories in my family as well. There are some stories of bad choices. I normally, when I teach, take a passage of Scripture and I like to cut it apart and dissect it and outline it and relate the truth that's there. I'm not so much a storyteller type of preacher, but today I want to tell you some stories. I want to tell you some stories of choices. I've got a guy in our congregation who has a phrase that he repeats often. He even has it on a computer screen saver, scrolling across his computer screen. And anytime anybody sits across from him at his desk, they can see the computer behind him, and he gets a lot of questions about it. And what he's got rolling across there is, you can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. I said my grandfather was a minister and a leader in his denomination. My other grandfather was what they called a rounder. Does anybody know what a rounder is? It's probably a Tennessee term. Made the rounds of the bars. Drinker. Barroom brawler. Before he got married, when he was very young in the 1920s, they used to wander the hills. Him and a couple of buddies would wander the hills of western Tennessee looking for the stills. Maybe kind of like the Otis Campbell, the drunk on the Andy Griffith Show, wandering the stills, looking for places to drink, looking for the moonshine. Young men from that part of Tennessee would often go to Memphis. They'd go to Memphis to try and get a job, try to make some money, try to seek their fortune, try to get out of the ways of the poverty of life in the hills. My grandfather did that, but of course he had to make the rounds. He went to the bars. He was a tall, big-boned guy. He got in some pretty bad matches, and he got in such a barroom brawl one time that he got arrested and he got thrown in jail. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. So my great-grandfather had to make the 90-mile trek, which took a lot longer then than it does today. He made the 90-mile trek to go from their home in the hills to Memphis, home that was built before the Civil War, little more than a log cabin, no running water, no electricity. To go to Memphis to get my granddad out of jail if he could, talk to the sheriff. The sheriff agreed to let my grandfather out of jail on one condition, that he never set foot in Memphis again. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. So my grandfather goes back to the hills, but he marries a young girl, settles down. They start having children. They had 9 children in 13 years, raising them in the same house. My dad grew up living in the house his grandfather grew up in, a little more than a log cabin, no electricity, no running water. They were so poor they didn't even have an outhouse. I mean, you talk about, you know, people who were so poor they had to have an outhouse. My dad's family was so poor they didn't even have an outhouse. During the time his wife was alive, he was never known to take a drink. But after having 9 children in 13 years, she died, living the kind of lifestyle that they lived in the hills. My dad was 13. He had younger sisters, age 11, age 9, some older brothers and sisters still at home, and those kids had to begin to take care of the house and take care of the farm. And so after my grandmother, Anna, who my daughter is named after my grandmother died, my grandfather returned back to drinking again. And the habits and the practices were passed on to the next generation. One of those sons, my dad's brother, my Uncle Bill, he was a great baseball pitcher in high school, and I'm told he was one of the nicest guys. One of the nicest guys you would ever meet. But he made that trip to Memphis. Try to get out of the hills. Try to get out of poverty. Try to get a job. But of course he made the rounds. He went drinking. He was with a buddy. They were drinking some whiskey. Unbeknownst to him, his so-called friend slipped him some LSD. When my uncle came back to the hills from that trip, he was not the same person he was before. He was mean. He was violent. He was nasty. His mind was blown. His mind was bent. For the rest of his life, he was never right. He was in and out of mental institutions, in and out of psychiatric wards, in solitary confinement because he was so dangerous. In the 1960s, he had to undergo electric shock treatments. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. And so he lived in the hills on disability, never married, lived in a house, no running water, no electricity. He was a hermit in the hills that everybody knew was crazy. My dad would go down there and try to help him, and he would leave him vehicles. He'd leave him a truck. He'd go down there and make another trip, and the truck wasn't there. "Where's the truck, Bill?" "Oh, I sold it." "You sold it? Who'd you sell it to?" And he called somebody's name and he said, "He gave me $50 for it. Don't you think that's a good deal?" They would come out of town and they would find him and find where he lived, and they would take him and take advantage of him because they knew he was nuts. They knew he was crazy. They knew he was barely capable of surviving. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. He finally died of an enlarged heart, Christmas Eve 1996. I was asked to do his funeral. Another of my dad's brothers lived in the hills, fought on the front lines in Korea. He left a promising minor league baseball career to go back to the hills and marry the teenage girl he thought he couldn't live without. I was just in Tennessee last week for her funeral, 56 years after they were married. They had 6 children, all boys. Bobby Clyde, Connie Mack, Tony, T, Hoss, and Roger. Some of the names are a little different than what we have up here. And if I showed you a picture, I got pictures on my cell phone that I took last week. You couldn't tell the difference between Hoss and Roger because Hoss was the 5th out of the 6 born, and they nicknamed him Hoss. And then they must have got that nickname too early because Roger came along after Hoss. And Hoss is a little guy, and Roger's huge. I mean, he's massive. He's the biggest of the bunch. So he's a little bit misnamed. 2 of those boys, T and Hoss, got full ride baseball scholarships. Middle Tennessee State University. A chance to get an education. A chance to get a college degree. A chance to figure out a way to make some money. A chance to get out of poverty. A chance to have a life different than what had been in those hills generation after generation. One day during Hoss's freshman year, T was a year or 2 a little older. Before he'd ever played his first baseball game on that full ride scholarship. They were out in a couple of cars. They were joyriding. They were speeding. Wasn't unusual. When I was a little kid and we went down there to visit, I'd get in the car with them when they didn't even have driver's licenses. Dirt roads. There'd be a fork in the road. They'd say to me and my brother, "Which way? Do you know which way?" Of course, we didn't know which way. My brother said left. I said right. He went left. Went down a mile or so and he said, "Oops, that was wrong. Randy was right." And then he'd take off through the woods. Just a regular sedan through the woods, just driving crazy through the woods. When they were in town, they would hang out the window while they were driving with BB guns, shooting their buddies on motorcycles with BB guns. Crazy. Nuts. So here they are in university, full-ride baseball scholarships, out joyriding, speeding, going up a hill, cars side by side, coming to them when they got over the hill, another car. Hoss, the car he was in, veered, crashed. He was thrown from the car. His mouth and his nose were packed with the mud from the embankment. He couldn't breathe. Didn't breathe for I don't know how long. They resuscitated him on the scene, but he was in a coma for 27 days. This guy that had a full ride baseball scholarship and a promising life and a career, when he finally woke up after 27 days of not knowing whether he would live or die, he had to learn how to walk all over again. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. Wise choices will keep you safe. Today, my cousin Hoss is 48 years old. He walks like a stroke victim. He got a job at a sawmill for a short time, the same sawmill that my granddad used to work at. Had to stop working there after he cut off his finger. Because he's incapable. He lives in a trailer. He's mentally and physically disabled. He lives on disability. And I know when he was a kid, he used to make fun of crazy Uncle Bill. And now in his own mind, if he doesn't know anything else, he knows this. I'm Uncle Bill. I'm just as crazy as he was. I'm just as messed up as he was. I'm just as incapable as he was. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. On the other side of the family, my mom's side of the family, I had another cousin. He was a son of my uncle, the preacher I talked about earlier. He began to make some bad choices in high school. Those bad choices carried on into his young adult life. In one conversation I had with my uncle, I said, "How's Doug doing?" He said, "Doug is involved in a lot of things." He said he's involved in some things that are very bad, things that are very dangerous, things that could even take his life. And he says, "I just don't know what to do about him." One October night, in a church service, my cousin Doug walked down the aisle and went to the altar. Another preacher came and prayed with him for about 20 minutes. For the next few weeks, my cousin was a changed person. One Saturday morning, my uncle was awakened by the knock on the door, the ring of the doorbell at 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning, with a policeman at the door. "Your son has been in an automobile accident and is dead." I'll never forget getting the call from my dad at 10 o'clock that day. I'll never forget going to my uncle's house and the waves of grief that would just roll through that house as he tried to talk to family, and then he would have to walk down the hallway just sobbing. I told him, I said, "Doug was the lead story on the Channel 8 News, the number one story, young man killed. What happened? What caused it?" When I told my uncle that my cousin was the lead story in the news, he kind of got me off to the side and very quietly said, "Did they say whether or not alcohol was involved?" I said, "They didn't say. Right now it's still under investigation." See, what happened was the Friday night before that, we were having a birthday party for my son. He was about 2 years old at the time. But Doug chose not to come to the family birthday party for a little baby, but to go to another party that his friends were having. There's one thing that we're grateful for. An autopsy was done and showed that Doug was completely clean. A few weeks after going to the altar and praying, he had gone to a party, but he had taken no alcohol. He had taken no drugs, nothing in his stomach, no chemicals in his system whatsoever. He had gone to a party where several others were drinking and taking drugs, but he had chosen not to. However, when his friend, who was drunk and had marijuana in his possession, got in the car to drive, my cousin got in the passenger side. They took off heading west down 86th Street on the northwest side of Indianapolis, and they were speeding. The police started a pursuit, and when you go out on 86th Street west from Marion County into Hendricks County, it gets windy and it gets curvy. Well, the road curves, but the car didn't. And at about, well over 100 miles an hour, the car went off the road into a wooded area and a ravine embankment down below, and a tree was cut in half, and the car was cut in half. The engine block was 50 feet away from where the main body was of the car was. My cousin was thrown from the front seat to the back seat. His arm was severed. He was crushed from the chest down, most likely died immediately. His life was over at the age of 24. And 14 years later, my aunt and uncle still grieve the loss. And whenever they see a young blonde-haired man in a mall or in a car, they turn their head to see if it's him. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. My own dad made some choices. When he graduated from high school, he left the hills of Tennessee. Instead of going to Memphis, he went to Chicago. Went to Chicago because his friend, Lum Chumney, true, that's his name, Lum Chumney, his older brother lived in Chicago, lived on the south side of Chicago, the rough part, a little apartment, worked at a little factory there, and dad and his brother, his cousin, dad and his friend Lum were able to get on at this little factory. But Lum's older brother and his wife just fought all the time, fought like cats and dogs. Dad couldn't hardly stand it. One Friday after they got off work from the factory, they went back and Lum's older brother was standing there in the parking lot of the apartment complex with all the luggage, and he said, "You boys want to take a trip to Tennessee for the weekend?" Because his wife had kicked him out. So they go to Tennessee for the weekend, wanted her to cool off. When they went back, Lum said, "I'm not going back." My dad said, "Well, I'm going back," because he didn't feel it was the right choice to leave a job and not even give 2 weeks' notice. So he went back just because he knew he had at least to be right, to be ethical and give the 2 weeks' notice. He went back, got his own little apartment, lived by himself on the south side of Chicago for a little while, was faithful to the job, but it didn't last very long. It wasn't for him. It was a duty at that time. Many of you know that young men had to fulfill a duty of military service, so he chose to go ahead and enlist and fulfill his duty of military service, trained in the Air Force at Lackland Air Force Base down in Texas, stationed in Orlando, met a teenage girl in high school. They got married. A few weeks later, he's overseas for a year. He comes back. They start having kids. My older brother, when he was a baby, was very sick, with, at the time they called it scarlatina. I don't know if it was a form of scarlet fever or what, but he was very ill. They took him to a church meeting and he was prayed for and he was miraculously healed. And my mother and my father made a decision. They made a choice that they were going to commit their lives to Jesus Christ. And they were going to serve Him. The job situation in Florida completely dried up. They came up here like many people did because Delco was hiring. That was a long time ago. But it was all booming around here back then. And three shifts a day going at all these factories. And he came up here to get the job in Indiana. They made a decision. They made a choice that they're going to get involved in a church. And they're going to be committed to that church in the good times and in the bad times. And there's good times in church lives and there's bad times in church lives. And they were going to be committed. And they were going to be committed and faithful to their family. And they're going to serve the Lord. And they're going to give Him their time. And they're going to give Him their talents. And they're going to give Him their treasure. And today my dad is not living in poverty in Tennessee. My dad is extremely, extremely blessed. My family is extremely, extremely blessed. And I've heard my dad say over and over and over again, our lives are the product of the choices we make. Our lives are the product of the choices we make. Today, I am the pastor of that church that they decided to commit to. My brother is a professor of church history, theology, and biblical languages at John Brown University, training students for ministry. He has 4 post-high school degrees, 2 of them doctorates. He got the brains, I got the looks. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. The book of Daniel is a book of prophecy, and we can sit around and have fun arguing over the interpretation and the meanings of the prophecy, but I think we can agree that the book of Daniel would show us that God is in control of things. But there's also one thing that God doesn't control. In Daniel chapter 8, verse 4, it speaks of a king and it says, He did as He pleased. He did as He pleased. God gives us the power of choice and He does not control our choices. Joshua 24:15, choose today whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Romans chapter 6, verse 16, don't you realize that you become the slave of whatever you choose to obey. You become the slave of whatever you choose to obey. You can be a slave to sin, which leads to death, or you can choose to obey God, which leads to righteous living. So I go back to verse 11 of Proverbs chapter 2. Wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. Choose to study the Word of God. Choose to know the Word of God. Choose to live by the Word of God. Because your life and those of your children and your grandchildren will be the product of the choices that you make. You can choose the choice, but you can't choose the consequence. May God help us all to make the right choices. God bless you as you study together.